Robbie Caron, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Nogueira are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Clara Ibarra, Andres Contreras, Dennis Moynihan, Hugh Grand, Jessica Lee, David Prude. And our website is democracynow.org. There you can see all of our coverage of climate change from the People's Climate March in September, our three-hour broadcast special, everything leading up to today, as well as our past coverage of the climate summits from Copenhagen to Cancun, from Doha to Durban, as well as the People Summit that took place in Bolivia. We're here all week in Lima, Peru. DemocracyNow.org has the podcast, the video, and the audio, as well as our transcripts. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is more talk radio with hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today, we'll invite our listeners to reflect on the quintessential holiday themes of repentance, forgiveness, and reconciliation.
By some hole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Shadows of Liberty Screening and Media Reform Action Tour, Friday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Oregon Labor Center in Portland. The documentary film Shadows of Liberty reveal insider accounts of a broken media system with renowned journalists, activists, and academics, including Amy Goodman, Danny Glover, Julian Assange, Norman Solomon, Chris Hedges, and more. This film champions the idea of an independent media where truth and integrity are the norm, not the exception. Again, that's the Shadows of Liberty Screening and Media Reform Action Tour, Friday, December 12th, 7 p.m. at the Oregon Labor Center, 3645 Southeast 32nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Volunteers of America, Oregon, committed to helping 17,000 vulnerable people of all ages in our community live better lives each year. You can learn how to help by visiting the website at voaor.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
morning.
Today is Monday, December 8th, 2014, and you're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO, your community radio station.
That's right. It's at 90.7 FM in the metro area, 91.9 FM in the Columbia River Gorge, and 104.3 Point South, Philomath and Corvallis. We are on the web, too. Yeah, that's www.kboo.fm.
My name is Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with the fabulous...
Me. I'm Celeste Carey. Good morning.
And
happy Monday. That's what you said.
Yeah,
right?
It is a happy Monday. Happy Monday.
Well, I'm happy because I woke up, and it is Monday.
It is Monday, and you are awake, and so are you. Let me give you our phone numbers so you may participate in our conversation this morning. You may reach us via phone at 503-231-8187. And if you want to email us, it's at moretalkradio@gmail.com.
You got your phaser on, Stan?
I do.
Okay.
On stun. Not kill, but stun.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, oh.
All right. I'm doing likewise here. There we go. So, how many of you have been... Wow, I'm about to ask a stupid question. Okay. Hey, it's Monday. Okay, I can get away with it. It's mm-hmm. probably the only time. I have been keeping up with the news and have noticed that there has been quite a bit of depressing items regarding the state of relationship between communities and the police, or state of the relationship between Congress and the president, or people and the economy, although we did get some good economic news.
For many people.
Yes, yes. The job outlook has improved considerably. However, for a lot of us who have been struggling with various aspects of bad news, it seems to be one blow after another. Mm-hmm. And so Cecil and I usually like to figure out ways to kind of break down whatever situation there is into a conversational level. And I have been keeping up with a lot of the news of what's going on back east, because as I've mentioned before, St. Louis is where I grew up. And so I tend to not want to stay connected to that, because it can get a little depressing. One feels hopeless. So I decided, okay, what can we do to kind of move past that, given that this is a holiday season, and regardless of whether you are a participant in the consumer aspect of it or not, you know, it's a time when we're supposed to be looking toward family, looking back at the year, and trying to assess how effective we've been at supporting our values and supporting those we love, and being generally hopeful. And it occurred to me, well, yes, we do need to be hopeful. It is the one of the aspiring states of humanity. We should be hopeful so we can wake up and have another day with mm-hmm. people we love and supporting the things we care about. But healing is what we need to even get to that state of being hopeful. Hopeful and healing come together. And one way we can work toward healing is by looking at means of reconciliation and forgiveness. So to kind of get us in a more positive mood as we come to the end of the month and the end of the year, and hopefully not the end of our patience and our endurance, is to look at ways of reconciliation. And I want to remind people of a massive scale of reconciliation that has happened in our lifetime. And that being what happened in South Africa during the very end of the apartheid regime, and that people had to come together to realize really heinous events that had happened in the past and try to find a toehold in forgiveness and of rebuilding so that peace could ensue, so that the things that we're working on and the people we love can endure. And so I thought it would be a good thing to have a conversation about reconciliation and forgiveness, and how do we start that? We start it by the very small acts we do with each other. We do it by forgiving, talking, embracing each other despite whatever wrongs we've done. And especially when we can get conversations with both sides. Everybody doesn't have to totally agree on what the details of the forgiveness are, but they do have to agree on the goal of forgiveness, which is that we come together and we reconcile the losses and we heal the brokenness, and we find a dialogue that consists of love and respect and mutual assurance of existence. Mm-hmm. And today would be a good day to start, first day of the week, more or less, you know, depending on your reckoning, your metrics. But just to start with your individual acts of forgiveness for things. And I don't mean small things. I'm talking about large things in your life so that other people can hear it. And perhaps we can start a little nudge in our gestalt, in our community consciousness of forgiveness, and try to thaw some of that ice, and quell some of that heat, and instead just have some light and warmth toward each other. And I'm not saying it's going to be easy. My word, no. But I do believe that we start somewhere. We have to start somewhere. And since by my nature and my work, I believe in bridge building, let's start and share. Now, Cecil, you have an article.
Well, a couple of things I want to share, because when we were discussing this topic, and you broached the subject about this forgiveness and reconciliation, and then I thought about it, and then, you know, I thought how difficult it is to talk about it, and so I was wondering, you mentioned the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, and so I would refer to an article in Common Dreams that Fania Davis wrote. She's out of the Oakland area, executive director of Restorative Justice for Oakland Youth. It's on commondreams.org, and it's entitled, "This Country Needs a Truth and Reconciliation Process on Violence Against African Americans Right Now," and in which she talks about in some more detail the points that you raise just generally, and how difficult. But when we were talking about it, it occurred to me that it is a difficult subject to talk about. And so when I posted on our website, you know, we talked about forgiveness and reconciliation. Mm-hmm. I preface it with another word, repentance.
Yes, and accountability.
So because it's so difficult and thick. And so, and then I thought I would just read two things that you mentioned, the killing of Mr. Gardner in New York, and the police officer who killed him issued a statement, and he said, "I became a police officer to help people and to protect those who can't protect themselves. It is never my intention to harm anyone, and I feel very bad about the death of Mr. Gardner. My family and I include him and his family in our prayers, and I hope they will accept my personal condolences for their loss." Mr. Gardner's wife, Esau Gardner, was asked about the officer's statement. Her response, and was hell no.
Oh.
The time for remorse would have been when my husband was yelling to breathe. No, I don't accept his apology. No, I could care less about his condolences. He's still working. He's still getting a paycheck. He's still feeding his kids. But my husband is 6 feet under, and I'm looking for a way to feed my kids now. Who's going to play Santa Claus for my grandkids this year? Who's going to play Santa Claus? I'm determined to get justice for my husband. My husband's death will not be in vain. I will fight till the end. A natural response.
A natural response.
And
an understandable response.
And so when we talk about forgiveness, you know, sometimes we just want to brush over the difficult things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always so easy. So what we would like for you to do, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Share examples in your personal or social life when you offered forgiveness or sought forgiveness from others, as a way in which we can begin this conversation around this time of year, and maybe expand the conversation. But if you speak from your experiences, that would be something that would be helpful.
And we're looking again for, we're not looking for the surface, the trivial, waxing philosophical about things that you didn't actually do. We're looking instead for you to go deep. If you don't have anything to share, don't feel obligated necessarily to call in to comment. Instead, if you know somebody who has, encourage them to call and share, because what we're looking for is that beginning, that thaw, the softening, the time when the seed of hope will sprout and something is starting to burst forth. We're not looking for the trivial things at all. And I'm going to ride shotgun over the, over the airways, because this is not a small thing. This is a very large thing, and I am very sincere about trying to start a place, a quiet place, a safe place, a respectful place for people to share when they were willing to become vulnerable and offer up their heart in sorrow, in apology, in repentance. And, you know, her response is really interesting. And it's important for us to understand there are stages of grief. There are stages of forgiveness. Right now, Michael Brown's father is being investigated for allegedly starting a riot, because he, in his grief, was saying he's ready to burn things down. And it's interesting that you read the mother and the wife's response of Eric Gardner in raw pain, and people are understanding this is raw pain, okay? Mm-hmm. Yet when Michael Brown's father is expressing the same frustration and raw pain, they're ready to put him in cuffs and throw him, you know, in jail and under the spotlight for interrogation. And that is another aspect of why we need to look at forgiveness and reconciliation, not because we've got people who are dangerous, not because these people shouldn't be expressing these stages of grief, but because these stages are so raw and they're so real and the loss was so profound, it's like we've forgotten how to relate to pain, somebody else's pain, somebody else's loss, and to encircle them with love and healing so that they don't feel that rawness by themselves, and that we are touched by it and we are softened by it. Any comments on, yeah, on her response?
I think it's natural, and if you listen to it, watch the video, and similar if you listen to Michael Brown's stepfather's response, and let me say that his father's response came right after his mother, who was there in a very public forum, whose first hearing, mm-hmm. In the midst of a crowd, that there would be no indictment,
right,
for the man who killed her son.
Right.
She very expressively shared her grief. Mm-hmm. Her husband was right there with his wife, grieving together.
Yes.
And everyone has a cell phone, everyone has a camera these days. And very much we invaded their space.
Their private moment of intense grief.
But also, I think it was a public moment. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't just, I think part of the challenge we have is, if she can just forgive them or they can forgive the officer, things will be okay, without recognizing the larger societal issue in terms of communities who are impacted by it. So although they were expriving their immediate personal feelings, I think it was also symbolic of a community's grief. And so as you referenced the truth and reconciliation process in South Africa, it's a long process. And I see we have two callers. I wasn't sure. So let's be quiet and let's hear what Edie has to say. Good morning.
Hi. I'm going to apologize up front if I'm addressing things or not appropriately addressing what you said, because I had a hard time hearing when I was on the phone waiting. Mm-hmm. I'm calling because I'm seeing it from multiple sides. Like, you walk around the elephant, each mm-hmm. component is true, but there's a bigger hole to it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, a person who's suffered police brutality and witnessed a lot of it, we can do ourselves a favor and forgive, not because what they did is forgivable, but because we can't poison ourselves with the bitterness, the hatred, the cynicism, the despair, losing up our power. And our real power is love. When we're angry, we can use that power of love to make things better. And then second of all, I also found it repugnant when I heard and read the police, supposed apology, because it sounded like just an attorney PR, scam, avoiding any accountability or any action to make things better, not addressing the real issues at place. Mm-hmm. It's just to pacify the public so they will be even anti the blacks even more. Mm-hmm. But then third, what I'm thinking of with teaching my children, what is an apology? You need to first acknowledge the facts, which the truth of reconciliation is. You cannot have reconciliation unless you first have the truth. And people need to be seen and heard what their experience is. And that's what racism, classism, the attacks on protesters does, is it denies the reality, the experience, the needs, the feelings, the legitimacy of the folks who were brutalized. Second, an apology needs to have an empathy, understanding the feelings and the needs that were not met, and our connectedness and our caring about that. Third, we need to acknowledge that what we did was wrong. There's no excuse for it. There's no excuse for abuse. There's no excuse for police brutality or for police killing. Fourth, we need to be able to be accountable for addressing the past wrong we just did and asking the victims of it what they want, what would meet their needs, mm-hmm. not imposing something. And then fifth, we have to have an action plan for the future. How are we going to stop this? I saw and heard nothing from the police department saying, this is how we're going to stop racial profiling. This is how we're going to stop the brutality. This is how we're going to teach this. This is how we're not going to hire folks who are PTSD. We're not going to allow the militarization, not only of the equipment, but of the mentality of folks that we're not enemies. Six, there needs to be a way to hold these accountable from there on. Mm-hmm. Prosecution, grand jury, all that sort of stuff. It's otherwise, it's not an apology. It's just, I'm sorry, shut up. I want to get on with doing the same sin again.
Mm-hmm. 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 And, and that's one of the things, now, not having actually heard his apology. I don't mean read. I mean actually, you know, orally experienced it and seen him. I have to agree, because when I look at those words, I don't feel that he felt the loss that would require and inspire an apology. I agree with you. It feels like a palliative, like he threw some salve out there, you know, hoping that he hit the spot.
And I don't know.
Say that again.
You know, he can feel whatever he wants to feel. You know, I've abused and say, oh, I'm so sorry. It'll never happen again. They cry. Someone on autism spectrum, because I feel really, really horrible. But what makes a difference to me is, what are you doing to change the past action, to the harm of the past action, and to not do that harm again? Without that, it's shit.
Okay. We have to be careful with expletives here because we need our license. But okay. I think that, you know, you summed up a lot of our points succinctly, and we thank you.
Okay. We have to let her go. Okay. Part of, you know, the thing that I think a point that I think she expressed, but I also want to emphasize that it's much more than this individual officer.
Yes.
Saying something about his individual action.
Mm-hmm. I mean, talking about the systemic.
Systemic. So I've read repeatedly or heard repeatedly that there's a few bad apples, but you know, most of the and name the organizations are good people. Well, there's something about the organization itself, its systemic oppression, systemic racism, that we need to get beyond the Kodak moments of hugging one another and address the deep issues. So an individual officer might feel remorse, may express it well, but there's something deeper that needs to be addressed oftentimes. Let's go to our next caller, and please watch your language, George. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, you two. How are you doing?
I'm well.
It's Monday.
Yeah, well, I love you, too. I really enjoy your program, and I wanted, you know, you got me thinking about this reconciliation idea, and so I've been sort of scrubbing my conscience to see with whom I have to reconcile. Mm. And you know what? I come up with nobody. Oh. And I know, I think I'm 78, and I think I've lived a pretty good life of love and kindness and a lot of volunteer work. And I think the best solution to this thing is to live a life where reconciliation is not necessary. And, you know, I'm pretty active on the Internet, and I get these horrible, awful, vicious attacks, mostly racial, and I really feel for these people. I sometimes I wonder if they know they're being so racial, and they say these awful things about
let me ask you a question then, so we can keep this relevant and keep it succinct. Since you feel that you're in a state of grace, more or less, who have you had to forgive?
And you mentioned those people on the internet and the horrible things they had to say. Either those folks or in your life, people who done wrong.
They really, I don't know how to deal with it. You know, sometimes I try to say, you know, express my views that this is, you know, angry hatred, and it just doesn't seem to do any good. It seems to make the wound fester even more.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you for your call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. For calling. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil.
I am Celeste.
And we're talking about the process of repentance, forgiveness, and reconciliation. How and when do these concepts become real in our personal and social lives? Give us a call. Give us an example of forgiveness. And I want to ask another question.
Go right ahead.
What do we mean by forgiveness? We throw out this term. It might mean different things.
Different things.
To different people.
And I also want to say, you know, with regard to the officer's apology, you know, you've got You've got a New York police chief union, a police union chief defending the killing of this man, which to me negates the apology.
What is the
point of the apology if the apology doesn't go to the heart of the action?
And that points to the systemic problem that we have. Let's go to our next caller. Harvey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste and Cecil. How are you today?
I am well.
Oh, yes.
Very good. I feel that since we're creative, we're very creative beings, I find that the world runs on language. And if you can change the language, you can change the world. And I say, I'm calling for a new language of inclusion, not separation. And we need to...
Okay, that's good, but we're not talking about language. We're talking about when you have specifically either forgiven a grievous and heinous wrong, or you've been forgiven one, more so than talking about how to address details of this particular incident.
Well, I understand the details of it, but I say that we're speaking the language of war, even in our sympathetic relationship with each other.
So how has that language of war been involved in your forgiving someone?
Well, I try to speak, I've moved my language to a language of peace and inclusion. For instance, I don't even say the word African American. I say American of African descent. That means that it's absolutely, they're guaranteed all the rights of being an American, and they're of descent. I'm very careful with my language, but in reference to the words black and white, for instance, that's really the language of war. You know, you couldn't get more opposite. You know, think of it like start, stop. On, off.
We've had this conversation before. Go ahead.
But let me just ask a little bit, probe you a little bit more. In your interaction, when you proposed this way of speaking, people may accept it or don't accept it. What do you do when people don't agree with you?
I try to make the best of it and try to understand their position as well. And I'm always open to education to try to get past the basic conditioning, which is pervasive in our society, especially through the media. They're always using words that objectify us instead of personify us. And
I'm
trying to.
You're trying to do it
by creating a language of inclusion.
Okay.
I'm trying to get past the pain. I'm trying to create, even for the next generation, I'm trying to create a new platform by which we can communicate with each other.
Excellent. Hey. But thank you for your passion and your determination to work on that.
And thank you for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And you know, my biggest challenge, and I just want to say this because we said this before, is for me, if he truly wants to listen to what I have to say about how I feel about being called black, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. So if he wants to insist on considering it only from his perspective, that this is a language of war, we have an impasse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listen to me when I say this is how I feel about how, you know, I think one of our biggest challenges is when people want to be called by a name that in our estimation has to be wrong.
Yeah, I did. And this is...
Yes.
because I want to refer back to our first caller who mentioned about, you know, listening to what people feel who have been offended, what they want.
Yes.
And then I remember this article I read by, I want to make sure I refer to him. I think it's by a guy we interviewed a few weeks ago, Adam Phillips, the pastor. But he wrote something in Sojourners.
Oh, yes.
More recently. And let me just pull it up because I want to talk about, when Harvey was just speaking,
mm-hmm.
I sound like a lot of little microaggressions.
Yes, and exactly.
I think,
like, I don't know who I am. I don't know the language that I use. I'm incapable of deciding, you know, what my identity should be in light of freedom and freedom of expression. And so that's my biggest challenge, sir, with your particular experience. It does not account for my experience, and it denies it. But that's one reason why we have talk radio, so that we can work on these things.
Right.
Okay. The phone number, 503-231-8187, and you were saying?
His article is in SojournerSocho.net, hashtag Black Life Matters, why we need to stop replying All Life Matters. And he talked about some of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to our next caller. LJ, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Celeste. Thank you again for the conversation. I was at the Hands Up, Don't Shoot rally on Saturday. I've been an activist most of my life, Cecil and Celeste. I'm 75 years old now,
and
I've been an activist since back in the day. There was about 500 people down there.
Yeah.
Racially mixed.
Yes.
Lots and lots and lots of white faces. White people are finally starting to get the message, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, LJ, I want to shift the conversation a little bit because we're trying to focus on acts of forgiveness. Now,
okay,
in your rich 75 years, I'm going
to
hope.
I'm going there.
Okay, good.
All right. Law enforcement has set up an adversarial relationship with us. All right? The only way that you can have reconciliation is there's certain signs of humanity, of human feelings. Michael Brown laid on the ground as a dead man for 4 hours before anybody had the decency to cover him. All right? That's not human feelings. Police officers are not human beings because they don't have any human feelings.
So now you're gonna use a broad brush here?
No, not really.
All right.
So his body lay on the ground for 4 hours before anybody decided to recover him. Eric Gardner, who was choked to death by an illegal chokehold by some police officer, and there are other police officers there.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Gardner is saying, I can't breathe. What about the other police officers who should have told this guy, listen, get your hands off his neck, this man can't breathe, right? These guys are all in it together, all right? And that is a real, real problem. The good news about Ferguson is that the Crips and the Bloods quit shooting at each other, and now they are unified. All right? If you want truth and reconciliation, we're not the perpetrators of the violence. The violence is coming from law enforcement. So law enforcement has to step up. All right. As you can recall, it used to say protect and serve on Portland police cars. It doesn't say that anymore, because again, the system is adversarial, and when you have an adversarial situation, nothing's going to happen.
So do you think, you mentioned you were down as part of the rallies. I have a couple of questions from your perspective. In terms of the energy you felt, what would your thoughts about the energy of the rallies, and particularly about the leadership of young people of color in those rallies?
Oh, let me tell you something. Teresa, who seems to be the leader of the Hands Up, Don't Shoot movement, is unbelievable. She's passionate. She's a human dynamo. She's probably one of the most wonderful activists I've ever met. The energy and the rage is obvious. Enough is enough, Cecil. when 28 Afro-American, when an Afro-American is killed by law enforcement every 28 hours in this country, we have a real problem.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you for your call.
Well, thank you so much, and let's try and be optimistic. If we can all work together, we can solve this problem. Okay. Take care. Have a good day.
All righty.
You too. Bye. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM.
Indeed. And the phone number to participate, 503-231-8187. You know what I was about to say? 839-48. Oh. Something like that. That's what I was call out the time instead. And, you know, I really appreciate some of the comments we've got because they do add a little depth to what we're searching for. But I have to say our first caller nailed it. You know, this is what we have to look for. And maybe some of the reason why we can't get a little bit closer to talking about the dynamics of reconciliation and apology and working together is, like we've said, there has to be a recognition of the harm done and a willingness to stop and a willingness to repent and move away from the harm done by rectifying the harm done, by talking to the people to whom the harm was done. Maybe we haven't even gotten to that point yet, but to get back to, I believe her name was Edie. Was it Edie, our first caller?
Yes.
Okay, said, you know, these are the points that we have to start at. So at least articulating those points are really important so that we hear what are the actual steps to moving to that point. If we're not hearing that repentance, if we're not hearing a request to reconcile and a request for forgiveness, then we need to express the need. We don't have to sit there mutely and wait for it. We can say this needs to be done because we need to move forward in healing, and these are the steps by which we get there.
Excellent. Yes, they are. We'll go to our next caller. Joan, good morning.
Good morning.
Share us your thoughts, please.
Yes, I wanted to say something about the truth and the reconciliation and maybe help George a little bit, because it seems like we have trouble with the reconciliation because we sort of gloss over the truth, and so you can't really understand, well, why reconcile what, you know? Mm-hmm. And like he said, you know, I don't really know about the truth. Well, that's the problem with this country. We're like in truthiness. Put it in populist,
I like
sin,
that.
Mm-hmm. Which is quite different from the truth. And the truth is that, you know, the underlying structure of our economy and our social construction is based on lies, and those lies are now institutionalized. The lies that underlie racism are now institutionalized economically and socially. And so we white people need to acknowledge that this system that we geniuses created is really bad, and now it's 250 years old, and even though we don't believe in it, many of us, we need to support those who have a clue about it, such as the young blacks, Latinas, and follow their lead, because we screwed it up, and we need to help those who know how to fix it and the ones who have suffered through it. Because this is clearly, I mean, this police, you know, homicides, murders, that is the front lines of institutionalized racism based on, you know, quite honestly, a policy of genocide from way back when. So that's the truth. Once you come to that understanding and do your research and figure it out, the reconciliation part isn't going to be that difficult, in my mind.
Mm.
So,
Well, thank you, Joan.
Yes, indeed.
For sharing, and
yeah.
It may be the truth, but it'll take us a long while to get there.
Well, it's taken too long already, and mm-hmm. that's because people don't want to hear the truth. White people, especially, because they're going to have to give up their, you know, comfortable lifestyles.
Yes.
Yes.
And you know what? That's it. So what? But guess what? Your life is actually better when you have a life that has some truth and integrity to it.
That's absolutely right.
Believing this, you know, colossal lie that's been going on and that we've been taught and are still teaching.
Well, I think part of the solution for people who have relationship with other people who can hear that. So, you know, this is the holiday season, you mm-hmm. know, people will be going to those god-awful family reunions and gatherings. It might be opportunity to raise some of those issues with
exactly.
some of our friends and relatives.
Make it a super exciting holiday season for
them. That's right. You may not be invited back next year, but it'll be worth it.
Then that's all the more reason. Okay, thank you so much for the show.
You're welcome. You're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Mm-hmm. This is More Talk Radio. I'm here with Cecil. I am Celeste, and we're addressing the need to start healing. You know, one of the things, and I'm going to say this because I like what Joan said. Here's the deal, America. For a lot of people of color, and specifically Black people of African ancestry, regardless of the percentage, there is a real fear of the police, not because we are criminals, but because we recognize that in many people's mind, this law enforcement system was designed to keep us in a state of Jim Crow existence. If you don't know what Jim Crow is, I'm going to suggest you do some research. It's not that I, you know, don't care to be an educator. It's just today I don't feel like being an educator in that respect. You know, for us, and I say for us, I grew up hearing that there's open season on Black people. And that's a frightening reality to have to grow up with by seeing your colleagues, your peers, your relatives, your friends brutalized like this. And I'm not saying that all of them were innocent. Some of them might have had, you know, smudges on their faces. But mm-hmm. what I'm saying is there is the concept of appropriate force that seems to have, you know, just disappeared when it comes to dealing with Black males, especially in our society. So we feel like it's open season on black males especially, and that our system does not care that it wants to eradicate them. Now, every time we've turned around the past month, there has been a high-profile shooting. How many have not been high-profile? And so we need to address all aspects of what this truth is that there is a system out there that's designed to keep Jim Crow in effect, and we need to unravel its unholy relationship with law enforcement.
We'll go to our next caller.
Yes.
Richard.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. Not to be controversial, but I do think Celeste was a little premature in interrupting the man who called about addressing language.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it was relevant to the conversation being discussed, and it would have been nice had you just let him have his say.
Well, you know, he called in last week, and we had this conversation. Oh, well, I guess he didn't want a conversation. See, here's the issue, sir. For it to be a conversation, there has to be some place where there's a meeting of mind. And in our last conversation, not the one today, he denied me my right to be called by what I want to be called. And so at that point, I'm thinking we have no common ground because he basically contradicted himself. He said we need to listen to each other and find out how, you know, words to use to talk to each other and dismantle words. And when I told him, well, this word had no pain for me. Well, my word has a pain for me. Well, okay, I won't call you yours, but I need you to call me mine. And if he's not willing to understand and lay down his weapon, and his weapon being his paradigm, then we got a problem.
I think these conversations, the conversation you had with Harvey, I believe his name was earlier.
Well, that's what it was today.
And this gentleman who just called, are revelatory in a couple of ways.
Mm-hmm.
One is when we hold our viewpoint and we think it's right, how difficult it is to hear the other person's perspective and to give them the respect that's needed, as you suggested, that he did not give you last week. And also this week with this caller who called in objecting to how you had a conversation with this man, he refused to engage in the conversation.
Exactly.
Just revealing again, there's a lot of work that we need.
And it's really important when you object to something that we say, that we at least try to have a few seconds worth of conversation, so that the next time we talk, we have a starting point for you to call and say I object and then hang up. Basically, well, I can say this: it feels like an attack rather than an attempt at communication. It feels like, that's what I can say. It may not be what you intended. It may not be your desire at all. But if we don't have some type of discourse, well, it feels like a drive-by. There it is.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're talking about truth and reconciliation. And
good morning, Aaron.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on. First-time caller.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I mean, you guys were talking about forgiveness, and I think that was kind of the main topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm so excited because this is what I live my life by. And I'm a mother, and I'm a yoga teacher, and I'm an aqua teacher, and all that great stuff. So, I live mind-body every day. But when it comes to forgiveness, And I do believe that it's one of the most important virtues we can all hold. You have to have empathy for, you know, the person who committed the crime or whatever bad thing that's happened. So if you can't understand, no, and that doesn't matter, even if they're just a bad person, they've had a bad life, or they're mentally ill, whatever, you have to understand their side. So without that, I don't think there can really be true forgiveness. So if somebody wrongs you and you say, and they say, oh, I'm sorry, and you're like, okay, well, I forgive you, I think it has to be deeper than that for you to really feel the true meaning of forgiveness, which is letting go, and not just letting go, but understanding and letting go. And for some of the callers, I think they can need to do some of that too, an understanding of both sides, whether you agree or not. Mm-hmm. I think the basis of forgiveness is really just understanding and then letting go.
So let me ask you, because I appreciate that definition, and you've forgiven us that definition. What do you think of the phrase that often people say, I will forgive, but I don't forget?
I'll forgive, but I won't
forget. Mm-hmm. Is that forgiveness in your sense?
I think there's two meanings to that. I think uh-huh. there's people, when they say that,
uh-huh.
I think that they mean, I'm going to remember that you did harm, so I'm going to always put a block up, and so you won't harm me again.
Right.
And then there's another meaning where, you know, it's, I'm going to forgive, I'm going to forgive you, but I'm not going to forget. So that's not really forgiveness in my eyes. But if, I mean, the first one, it's all individual. Yes. It really is. It comes down to the understanding of each person's thoughts, emotions, and situations. So I think that even that saying has two meanings.
Well, thank you. You know, but let me add something here to the conversation. For me, forgiveness requires not just some of the elements you've mentioned, understanding, but I don't see understanding happening until there's empathy. And I mean not just the sympathy, which is to come along with and walk with, but actually feeling what I am feeling. And that's what can lead to understanding. And I sometimes wonder how many of us, when we forgive or seek forgiveness, are actually looking at it from that empathy that needs to occur. When we have that empathy, when we are resonating with each other, we're feeling each other, and then we can actually have an accord. For that officer to ask for forgiveness, he has to really be willing to feel what it is like to lose a person, in the respect that each person who has lost Eric feels. So that means he has to open himself up to every single person who is feeling that loss, which includes the black male community. Is he capable of that? I don't know. Is he willing to do that? I don't know. But until he does do that, it's kind of hard to feel his apology.
Yeah.
And you know, and so I want to add that.
Say I'm sorry, and they're just liars, and that's sad. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all we could do, I guess, is just the best within ourselves and try to emanate that through those who are closest to us. But yeah, it's sad. Yeah. And there are so many bigger issues that I'm concentrating on just forgiveness, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's must have to be. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for your call and for listening.
Thank you for your call. Let's see if we can get one more caller in before we have to go. Harry.
Good morning, Harry.
And thanks for having it. You were mentioning about truth and reconciliation. In the courts, you have to allocute. That means say everything about the crime so people can understand how it happened and what's going on. The police officer in New York, he was kind of hesitant on his apology because of the civil lawsuit that's probably going to happen.
Right.
There's also the... we had this incident 30 years ago. Remember the smoke 'em, don't choke 'em T-shirt?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, how come the New York police still use a chokehold?
Well, you know, it was said it was a quote-unquote illegal chokehold. And so that really gets to the root of systemic damage and injury, because his colleagues, rather than stopping him from using a legal chokehold, which would taint their association with him, they've got their knees on his chest.
And the chokehold was banned by the New York Police Department a couple of decades ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how did he learn that, and why are they still accepting that? And who is going to bring that up and remind them? Well, the civil suit probably will.
Okay. You know? Yeah, okay. And the next one is, you know what the Catholic Church and the KBO has in common?
I'm afraid to ask.
They both have a confessional.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey. So, I mean, the KBO's confessional comes on at Sunday between 12 and
2. Right.
So that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
All right. Hey. We're trying to keep this relevant and keep it serious, you know. So, I mean, a little lightness is important, but don't trivialize the importance of this conversation. We do want to celebrate all of our programmers, but don't trivialize the conversation.
You know, today, thank you all for listening and participating in this conversation. I think it is interesting to note that on this date, 34 years ago, John Lennon was assassinated, and talking about forgiveness and peace and love.
And imagine what the world would be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let us go forth and imagine, but not just imagine, but do. Think about the steps of forgiveness, and especially the fact that empathy is so important, and feel each other. You know, whales, when they talk to each other, can feel each other. We should be more like them. When we say, I care for you, let them feel it. When I forgive you, that's because we both feel each other.
Thank you, KBOO listeners and supporters. Thank all of you who recently participated in our membership drive this past week. Stay tuned for
the Old Mole Variety Hour and other public affairs programming here on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Help support KBOO Community Radio by donating your used car, truck, motorcycle, boat, or any other vehicle. We'll transform the old machine into resources for unserved and underserved communities, free training, recording equipment, and great programming for the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world. For more information about vehicle donation, call 1-877-KBOO-123 or go to kboo.fm/vehicle.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, Portland's only community-owned and democratically run radio station. Welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Tom Becker. Joe Clement is our engineer. The Old Mole is dedicated to bringing you different perspectives on history, culture, politics, and current events than that of the corporate compromise news media. Today on our program, Bill Resnick interviews Steve Early, a labor journalist and activist with the Rich